wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7, listener-supported community radio. It is time now for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Denise Morris, your host for this October 16th Monday. Carl is our engineer. This morning, the Old Mole features Laurie Mercier, this week's Well-Read Red, talking about the battle of the ballot. She has some thoughts on how the left can make use of our upcoming elections. I'll be joined by movie mole Jan Hocken. We will review the film The War Tapes, currently playing at the Hollywood Theater. We'll also tell you some great stuff about the Old Mole Variety Hour, how you can support KBOO, and why it is vital to our communities. But first up, we've got Bill Resnick discussing the book Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. He is joined by author Michael Isikoff of Newsweek.
Michael Isikoff, welcome to KBOO.
Good to be with you.
Michael Isikoff's an investigative reporter with Newsweek, with David Korn of The Nation, wrote the recent book Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and Selling of the War. Michael Isikoff, your book describes the Bush team's hubris as not just a personal quality, but a sort of groupthink, like a group fixation of Iraq as the root of all evil. And it seems to me, in reading the book, those neocons, the whole group of them, coked one another up. They intensified their sort of sense of holy crusade. They wouldn't listen to anybody else, repeated it to one another. Tell us about that group and how they organized themselves and kept talking to themselves.
Well, you sort of had disparate strands. I mean, the hubris is, of course, a Greek word, and it refers to arrogance, the sort of sense of we know best. We can divine inner truths that others can't, and I think they seized on the Bush administration's top leadership seized on the idea that Iraq was the great threat. Many of them had been promoting the idea that the overthrow of Saddam was in America's best interest for years, for a whole bunch of complex reasons, including just guilt. For some of them who served in the first Bush administration, and the fact that, of course, the president's father, when he was in office, allowed Saddam Hussein to stay in power, didn't feel he had the international coalition willing to overthrow him and take on the enormous task of rebuilding the nation. So you had, a strand of that. You had a strand of administration officials who conservative Republicans who used the Iraq cudgel to bash Bill Clinton for what they perceived to be his feckless foreign policy. And then on top of it all, and we can't escape this, you had the President of the United States, George W. Bush, who really viewed this in visceral personal terms. This is in some ways separate and apart from the neoconservative philosophizing about why this would be in America's best interest. It just was a visceral matter for the president. And we describe in some pretty graphic terms some scenes where the president reacts, it displays this personal antipathy towards the president, at one time sort of blowing up with a string, towards Saddam, blowing up with a string of expletives when the mention of Saddam's name comes up, another time flipping his middle finger in the face of Tom Daschle when he tries to talk to him about Saddam. I mean, it's pretty striking that you had a president who reacted that way in a personal way. And, of course, there is the scene we describe when the president goes to the Texas fundraiser and says, this is the guy who tried to kill my dad. and one of the fascinating characters in our book who emerges, nobody knew at the time, but Dick Armey was the House Majority Leader and had all these profound doubts about Iraq and tried to express them to the president, warned him that this could that he'd enmesh the country in a quagmire, but was pressured by Vice President Cheney to keep silent. And how when he reads the president's remarks about his father, he says, oh, my God, I hope that's not what this is all about. So that's part of the equation, too. You had a lot of things going on. You had the post-9/11 era. But at the end of the day, you had a receptive ear to it at the top who, for reasons that, you know, perhaps only psychologists can divine, viewed this in personal terms.
Yeah, speaking of that, it was striking the another phrase that he used, and I think all of them used, I mean, if they didn't use the phrase itself, it was sort of the way they operated in the world. We're going to kick their ass, right? That Bush said that himself,
right,
apparently.
Right, that's what he said to Tom Daschle, that's what he said to his press secretary, Ari Fleischer.
Sure.
I'm going to kick his blankety-blank derriere all across the Mideast.
You know, they sounded like sort of high school football coaches, a bunch of them, you know, that they were going to kick ass. They were, you know, they were on the right side and they were going to push them around. It was a sort of a bully mentality in some way that then fused with this sort of sense of glory and grandeur about remaking the politics of the Middle East, of remaking the politics of the world, in fact. They're the great seers in some ways, and they were going to kick ass to do it.
Well, you know, and that's it. And there was this sort of, you know, inner sense that they knew the truth. They could see things that the intelligence community couldn't, the law enforcement community. And here you have Vice President Cheney, who, if you want to personify hubris, you can't get a better example than the Vice President, who felt he understood American intelligence and the threats to the world, and he could see these threats in ways that others couldn't. And that's why he makes these repeated trips to the CIA headquarters, in which he's hammering the analysts, and we, like, describe these scenes for the first time of what it was like to have Cheney bearing down on you, demanding to know what your, you know, what evidence you had for this, where, you know, why can't you see this? And then becoming seized on these, what in retrospect can only be described as completely nutty theories about Saddam's relationships to al-Qaeda, much of which, as we document in the book, comes from another fascinating character who the public never heard about or barely heard about before, this, you know, sort of, you know, offbeat, eccentric academic named Lori Milroy, who became seized on the theory that Iraq was behind every terrorist act in the world, including the bombing of the U.S. embassies in 1998 that everybody linked to al-Qaeda, including the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, by Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, she
became convinced that Saddam was behind it. And so when September 11th happens, she immediately says, aha, Saddam has struck us again. Now, there was no serious person in the intelligence community or the law enforcement community of the United States government that believed any of this for a second. They knew the evidence. They knew it was completely ridiculous, and they dismissed it. But, and here is the part that's almost mind-boggling, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Jim Woolsey, Doug Fife, all these people who were fierce advocates of an invasion of Iraq, seized on Lori Milroy's theories and promoted them, demanded that the CIA go back and look at this stuff, prove it, it's there, you can't see it. Then the Mohammed Atta in Prague allegation comes along, and the vice president, whose chief of staff, Scooter Libby, was a Wolfowitz protege, jump on it and say, aha, there it is, you're not seeing it, you're not connecting the dots, even when the CIA and FBI are saying, no, this is horse feathers, there's nothing to it. But they were convinced that they knew better, that they could see things, that the mere analysts and the professionals in the CIA and FBI couldn't see.
You know, the my favorite Lori Milroy story was about the Timothy McVeigh Oklahoma City thing, where she volunteered to be a defense witness, say that McVeigh couldn't have done it.
She was a consultant to Timothy McVeigh's defense team to try to prove that Timothy McVeigh was just a mere patsy for Iraqi intelligence, and this was the hidden hand of Saddam Hussein striking inside America.
Yeah, she's even called by other right-wingers, right, the sort of monomaniac who everything, all evil in the world was Saddam's.
Right, and that's the kind of thinking that was circulating around the highest levels of the United States government in the months of 2000, critical months of 2002, 2003, when the decision is made, we're going to invade this sovereign country that, for all its brutality and thuggery, had never attacked us.
This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Michael Isikoff. He's an investigative reporter with Newsweek. With David Corn, wrote a recent book, Hubris, the Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and Selling of the War. They did an enormous number of interviews and tied together a very large group of people. We've been talking about how this group, including Wolfowitz and Pearl and Rumsfeld and William Kristol and many, many others with Bush at the top, completely credulous and sort of wanted to become a historical figure and make up for his father's, the threat of Saddam to his father, permitted and facilitated the attack on Iraq. Michael Isikoff, you did so much work. You have all of these, all sorts of stuff that has not been reported. It's a really interesting book. Tell us another part. One final piece of the hubris. I think, at least really interesting to me, was their sort of notion that they had intensified within their own little echo chamber that they were going to be the saviors of the world. They were sort of going to reconstruct the geopolitical map of the Middle East. Where did they come up with all of that?
Well, there was always a strain of sort of neo-Wilsonian idealism in Wolfowitz. He was a striking figure on the one hand, absolutely determined to project American power around the world, and on the other hand, firmly believed it would be for the betterment of humanity, for the promotion of democracy. And around the time, in the run-up to the war, after the congressional resolution, which was primarily sold on the grounds of the Iraqi threat. Iraq was a growing and gathering danger. We can't wait for the smoking gun in the form of a mushroom cloud, all predicated on these claims about Iraq reconstituting its nuclear program, developing unmanned drones for delivery of chemical and biological weapons, all of which turned out to be false, all of which, as we document in the book, there was plenty of dissent within the U.S. intelligence community about, all of which was challenged at various points along the way by not just international agencies, but by dissenters and scientists within the United States government who knew that much of what was being claimed publicly was false, yet stifled, never very few of whom, if any, went public prior to the war. But after the war was sold on the WMD case, the president broadened it in a speech to the American Enterprise Institute, the conservative think tank that, sort of was the incubator for much of the case against Iraq, to this idea of promoting democracy, reordering the map of the Middle East. This would be an act that would lead to peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And, all of this, the professional analysts in the State Department said, where are you coming up with this? Where did you get the idea that there's going to be falling dominoes and that suddenly we'll be loved or respected in the Arab world if we invade one of their countries unprovoked. It was sort of pie-in-the-sky, dreamy idealism in a way, but fundamentally misguided, and also sort of, you know, completely ignorant, not of just the historical realities, but the harsh practical realities of securing peace and creating a democracy in a country that was torn by sectarian divisions.
That's the final bit of hubris that I was hoping to talk about. Their sort of confidence that all they had to do was behead the state and destroy Saddam's army, and somehow a free market paradise would just somehow spring up on its own. They were, it seems to me it was not only, it was neocon in a variety of ways. They actually didn't, they didn't recognize the need for a real culture and a democratic state and the need to create these sorts of institutions. It was as if all you had to do was destroy the sort of Saddamism and Saddamite socialism and the suffocating state that he had created, police state and many other suffocating features, and things would somehow spring into free market paradise.
Right, and you know, part of this was the desire to sell the war, to defend this pre-war sales pitch that this was going to be relatively easy, relatively inexpensive, relatively free of cost to the American public in terms of, you know, deaths and fatalities in Iraq, and the long grind, costly grind of rebuilding a country after the fact. They played down all of those difficulties in spite of multiple warnings. We interviewed for the first time the chief post-phase four post-invasion planner for the U.S. military, a man by the name of Colonel Kevin Benson, who warns them, in order to secure the peace after this, after we topple Saddam's regime, we're going to need a much greater number of U.S. troops. We're going to need much more extensive planning. There is a high risk of sectarian conflict. By April 12th, as we document, even just after the invasion, he's warning that we need a completely new phase four plan because Iraq is going to become a magnet for Islamic insurgents around the world. He's already seeing it. He's telling them. And these warnings, once again, are completely ignored because they, the leadership at the top, you know, did not want to raise any red flags, wanted to proclaim victory, did not want to tackle with the harsh realities of rebuilding Iraq.
Michael Isikoff, thanks a lot. It's a really interesting book, and indeed it's available here at KABU for a $60 membership pledge. Michael Isikoff, thanks a lot for writing it, and keep up the good investigative work of two more years of the Bush administration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Another great interview from Bill Resnick, who has dedicated every Monday for how many years, Bill, have you been doing this?
Longer than I want to think, but I'm
but not still, longer than
still
you want.
Feel young and thoughtful, I hope.
Always digging around for good personalities to bring onto the show to give our community listeners an opportunity to hear other voices that we don't get to hear. And that's what the Old Mole tries to do within KABU, not just as an alternative to mainstream, but also perhaps an alternative to other programming that you're able to hear. Provide lots of variety.
Yes, we're on the Old Mole. We're part of KABU. I think typify KABU in many ways. This station, my sense is this station gives you the best radio that you can get anywhere in the United States and indeed on the whole planet. We bring the most interesting debates, the most interesting people with, in fact, Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman, and the rest of us. We scour the country for people who are doing some of the best thinking, the best analytic work, not just giving you information, but providing a framework for understanding the world. Really interesting and thoughtful people. And we not only, of course, bring their interviews, we bring you their books. Michael Isikoff and David Korn did a really interesting book. I just interviewed Michael Isikoff. It's called Hubris, the Inside Story of Spin Scandal and the Selling of the War. We have it here for a $60 membership. The number here is, of course, 503-232-8818. You folks out in Pledge Central, how are we doing?
Well, we have an $800 goal, and we haven't heard the phones ring yet. So we need to get you calling 503-232-8818 outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-KBOO. And I know we got lots of calls from that number this morning, so let's keep those coming in.
My name's Ed. I'm here with Elizabeth. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Ed.
And, yes, that number, 1-877-500-5266, which spells KBOO, is good for anywhere in the country. So if you're listening to us online in Chicago, if you're listening to us online in Baltimore, if you're listening to us online in Winnipeg, I'm pretty sure that'll work for that also. Give us a call, 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818.
Yeah, and if that number doesn't work, you can always, and you're listening online, just go to you're at www.kboo.fm, so there's a place right there. Choose the Join Now button, and you can become a member. If you're in Paris, France, if you're in South America.
Well, ooh la la.
Japan, wherever. It's just amazing to think that KBOO can now be heard all around the world via the internet. So if you're one of those people who is getting your main source of news from right here through the internet, join now.
Old Mole Variety Hour, great program. When I first moved to Portland, I first started listening to KBOO, the Old Mole was on. I was listening to it. The quality of the news and public affairs here has only gotten better. And through people like Bill Resnick, who's being very modest, Bill will not tell you, but I will tell you that he was actually the first guy to break the Teapot Dome scandal in the Warren Harding administration. And you should be more forthcoming about that, Bill. 503-232-8818. I hear a phone ring, and we have 4 or 5 volunteers sitting here want to talk to you. The whole process takes a few seconds. It doesn't cost much to become a member of KBOO, and you give according to your needs and according to your requirements from us. If you listen to us every day, you might think about giving us some money to justify that.
It's easy to do. First of all, you can write a check for the membership amount, which is $60. We still take memberships at $40 for a basic minimum, and really, I think we have a low income membership even of $20. So at whatever your level of income, you should be able to afford some contribution. If you're listening now, if you're listening to KBOO now, pay for it. Help us fund our programming to make sure that it stays on the air so that you can continue to listen. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO. And we have some gifts that will sweeten the pot for you.
Thank you. It's ways to say thank you. You don't have to take a gift, but if you want to, we have some copies of Michael Isikoff and David Korn's book, Hubris. How many copies do we have? Do we know?
Five
copies at $60 a pop. Is it for a $60 pledge?
That's right.
Okay, now let me tell you what a $60 pledge is. That's 16 cents a day if you break it out day by day. 16 cents a day. Certainly KBOO is worth 16 cents a day to you. Plus you get Hubris, the Michael Isikoff and David Korn book about the corrupt, miserable, vicious Bush administration. 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818.
I think 16 cents a day would have bought 3 cups of coffee back in the day when Bill Resnick was exposing the Teapot Dome scandal.
Actually, that was a week's salary when Bill first started in radio.
That's right. My friendship with George Washington, goes way back.
My grandfather told me about listening to Bill on his crystal set.
That's right.
Hey, listen out there. If you're out there in Southwest Washington, and you are part of the member of the KBOO community, and we will pay the freight on the call. 1-877-500-5266. Free call to you. No matter where you are, you're a member of the KBOO community. It's you and us, and we will go together to try to improve this country. But you need information. Information is what you get at the Old Mole.
Oh, we already have some people to thank. And
right.
These are all renewals from Portland. Bill from Portland, Carl and Marion, also from Portland. All three are renewing. Thank you so much, Bill, Carl, and Marion.
If you want to be have your name read on the air, the easy way to do it, just call 503-232-8818. We're hoping to get more and more listeners around the country, around the world, and who will call or pledge online at kbu.fm online or 1-877-500-5266. It's quick. It's easy. You give some people some information. You're in and out to what, 2.5-3 minutes tops? Take 2 or 3 minutes out of your schedule. And I know you want to do this. I know there are people out there saying, well, I used to be a member. I'm kind of embarrassed that I let my membership lapse. Don't be embarrassed. You're always welcome back in the fold. No questions asked. We want all of the old people to gather at the river and become part of the community again.
Shall we gather at the river?
Yes.
$60. That might seem a lot to you in one fell swoop, but if you open an electronic funds transfer and the phone people can walk you through the steps of that very easily, that's $5 a month. Now, you won't even feel the pain on that one. So $5 a month.
I know my $5 evaporates when I open my wallet now. So
easily, yeah. Yeah, so don't even let it get to your wallet. Just have the bank take it out, send it to KBOO, and that keeps us functioning. We really like having the electronic funds transfer because we know that we have a reliable month-to-month income. So be a part of the sustaining members of KBOO and pledge. Make your pledge last throughout the year.
Okay, one more time on the numbers, 503-232-8818. Outside of the Portland metro area, Southwest Washington, Eastern Oregon, California, 1-877-500-5266. Online, kbu.fm.
Yeah, we want to thank the people who are furnishing food for our volunteers. Every day we have volunteers coming in during Pledge Drive. I think we're getting into the third week of the Pledge Drive, and every day there are restaurants that donate food for our volunteers. BoxLunchOnline.com today is furnishing food. I'm not sure how they do that online, but...
I don't know, but we also have a bricks and mortar restaurant, which is Acapulco's Gold at 2610 Northwest Vaughan. We'd like to thank both of you supplying us with food, us and our volunteers. If you want to be a KBOO volunteer, just come down and talk to Ani. Ani is our volunteer coordinator. But if you can't come down, if you're occupied, you have a job. Some people actually have jobs. How about that?
Jobs.
You can give us a call at 503-232-8818 and give what you can.
And
remember, a $100 a year contribution is 27 cents a day.
Yeah, and where do they come at if they want to pledge in person?
20 Southeast 8th, which is just a half a block off Burnside on the east side, south of Burnside, and we're the only radio station on the block.
Thank you for that wonderful support. Next up, well, actually, I should tell you, later in the show, Movie Moles, myself and Jan Hocken will be looking at the film The War Tapes. It looks at the lives of soldiers on the ground in Iraq from their perspective. But next, we've got Laurie Mercier, our well-read red.
As we approach November, and in Oregon, tomorrow is the last day to register to vote, many on the left wonder if elections really matter. When the right controls talk radio and other media, the presidency, Congress, the courts, the military, and even voting machines, aren't electoral politics merely a charade, useless, and a distraction for those of us who ought to be engaged in more militant action to bring about change? Right now, the American people are in motion against the Bush administration and its crew in the other branches of government. This is a movement towards deepening democracy and, as it progresses, potentially against capitalism. Recognizing where people are is critical for building momentum for social change, and most Americans see elections as the place where they might make a difference. Popular fronts, the broad coalitions of different political groupings, often made up of leftists and centrists who are united by opposition to the far right, have historically mobilized to successfully defeat the right and usher in more moderate regimes. The Democratic Party will never be a revolutionary party. The corporations inside of it will never allow it to be turned into anything that could fundamentally transform society or even to challenge corporate power. But progressives can hold their noses to elect Democrats and defeat the extremist right and help move various struggles forward. We can demand more demonstrations, more actions, more militancy, but all of this can be more effective by defeating the Republicans. If the Democrats take a majority in the House, for example, the heads of all of the committees will change, and some of these are the most progressive members of Congress. John Conyers, who fought against the theft of the elections in 2000 and 2004 and recently called for the impeachment of Bush, would be in charge of the Judiciary Committee and would likely force hearings on the Downing Street memos and the illegal war in Iraq. The chair of the Education and Labor Committee would be George Miller, who has protested cutting funding for federal student aid programs to finance tax breaks for the richest Americans, and would bring a vote to raise the minimum wage. Bush could spend his last 2 years in the White House besieged by searing probes into his presidency, the illumination of which can only help progressive causes. Republicans just need to lose 15 seats in the House and 6 seats in the Senate for their stranglehold to be broken. If the GOP loses control of Congress, the field of struggle shifts to a more favorable landscape for workers, communities of color, women, young people, seniors, and all struggling sectors of the population. Although much media attention focuses on the national picture, whether the Democrats take the U.S. House and Senate, it is at the state and local levels where elections matter most for many progressives and where policies dramatically influence the distribution of wealth, health, education, and innovative measures for public financing of campaigns, mass transit, and environmental protection. One would assume that altering this lock on power would be simple. The Republicans are in disarray, tarnished by scandals and corruption and an extremely unpopular war. But there are mammoth forces at work to defeat popular sentiments. Saudi Arabia, allied to the governing Republicans, has refused to limit oil production despite OPEC pressures, lowering oil prices to maintain support for the Republican Party. Karl Rove and other architects of Bush's brain are determined to maintain their Republican hegemony for generations and are likely to orchestrate anything, including vote fraud. And by design, the gerrymandering of seats to permanently fix their political complexion has made it extraordinarily difficult to dislodge incumbents. Bush is trying again to use national security as his trump card in this election, just as the terror of terror worked for the Republicans in 2002 and again in 2004. The Democrats don't help their case. They don't have a clear message on the war or on class issues. And, as Ed Garvey notes in the Madison Capital Times, there is apparently no outrage the Democrats will not put up with while sitting on their lead. They've remained silent as the crazies have eliminated habeas corpus, detained people without charges, permitted eavesdropping on Americans without judicial restraint, and allowed the CIA to run secret prisons. And, of course, if a voting machine company can't be trusted, nothing else about the election can be trusted either. But even the watchdog blackboxvoting.org, which documents election abuses across the country, advocates more active citizen oversight to work for authentication of election results, not giving up on the process. They urge citizens to make November 2006 the biggest grassroots evidence-gathering action in history, to collect videotape, audio, photos, and public records to hold election officials accountable. A bumper sticker advertised on the SmirkingChimp.com website speaks to both the conundrum and necessity of participating in electoral politics. Vote Democrat for more sensitive imperialism. The left needs to be deeply involved in the upcoming critical struggle to defeat Republicans, as distasteful as it might be to support the lesser of two evils, in order to halt the vicious spiral into fascism and shift the political landscape to allow openings for radical change. For more exploration of these ideas, see the online articles by Dan Margolis, Dilip Hero, David Sirota, Thomas Frank, David Korn, and Ed Garvey, in Common Dreams, The New York Times, The Smirking Chimp, FightingBob.com, and The People's Daily World. This is Laurie Mercier for the Old Mole Variety Hour's Well Read Red.
Thank you, Laurie, for your Well Read Red. This Well Read Red has been a feature of the Old Mole Variety Hour from its emergence years ago, created by
the legendary Chris Nielsen.
Yes, legendary around KBOO. Who
was generous enough then to allow us to continue doing the Well Read Red, his trademark riff, even as he left for greener pastures.
Yes, greener and rainier pastures up in Seattle. The numbers to call to make a pledge to help not just support KBOO, but to also put in your vote for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Get a copy of Hubris, the inside story of spin scandal and the war in Iraq.
For a $60 pledge, that's 503-232-8818 is the number to call. And we have our great volunteers standing by to talk to you more about why KBOO is so cool.
Good morning. My name is Ed. I'm here with my friend
Elizabeth.
And we're here to ask you to call those numbers. Let me give them to you one more time now that you have a pencil in your hand. 503-232-8818. Outside of Portland, toll-free call 1-877-500-5266. Online, a secure transaction online. Don't have to worry about that. At kboo.fm. And I was listening to the Well Read Red. I always used to listen to Chris Nielsen when he did that feature, because you're not going to hear that pretty much anywhere else. I can't think of another place on the dial. You're not going to hear it on Air America. You're certainly not going to hear it on OPB. Where are you going to hear stuff like that? You're going to hear it here because it's part of the fabric of KBOO. We're not afraid to annoy people. We're not afraid to scare people because it's a scary world out there. But we don't do it just for the sake of scaring people. We do it because it's information that you can use.
Yeah, 503-232-8818 gets you a membership here. You talk to the people answering the phones, and we're not hearing the phones ring now. This is a good time for you to ring our phones, 503-232-8818, because that way you don't have to miss any of the fascinating dialogue that you're going to hear from the Old Mole, always from the Old Mole. Good political dialogue that makes you think, that makes you activate. You want to participate when you hear this kind of discussion because you realize there's so much that needs to be done to get this country on track, to get our lives back and back. I'm not even sure back if we've ever been there, but I mean
we have our lives. It's just been damaged around the edges quite a lot.
Damaged.
They can't damage the core. 503-232-8818. We have an $800 goal for this segment, and we're well on our way towards that because a lot of people call that number, 503-232-8818. But we'd like to go out with a flourish, you know, drums and bugles, and let's get past that $800 goal. The Old Mole Variety Hour is a useful, entertaining, interesting way to spend a Monday morning and get the facts that you need to go on. And for a minimum $60 pledge, $60, that's 16 cents a day, ask for a copy of Hubris, the Michael Isikoff, David Korn book about the depredations of the creeps in office.
You know, one of the amazing things about KBOO is that we have volunteers who do all of our programming. All of the programming that you hear coming out of KBOO is done by volunteers who spend hours and hours and hours of their time. And these volunteers also contribute from their wallets to the ongoing livability of KBOO. Lori Mercier just made a pledge, for example. You just heard her doing the
well-read red.
I was kind of amazed because I heard her voice and then I saw her walk in and I thought there's a disconnect here. So that was a taped recording, I guess, of the well-read red. Anyway, Lori just walked in and made her pledge. So if our programmers can give from their pockets, and we know that they're not wealthy people, they're lefties, for God's sake. How many wealthy lefties do we know?
Besides George Soros, I don't know. I think Bill is
well, he's
angling for attention out there.
I remember Noam Chomsky came to town about 8 years ago, and I had the great privilege of talking to him and interviewing him. And we were talking after the interview, and what Chomsky said was, and I want to repeat it, I've said it before on Pledge Drives, Chomsky made the profound point, and he said, I can tell right away the cities that have a community radio station. And he said people are so much more inspired, so much more confident. The audience are so much larger. The questions are so much more thoughtful. That's because a community radio station brings that community together. It so advances sort of the level of thought. It supports the many organizations that the progressive community in Portland has formed. It's a It's the center of involvement of, in fact, the progressives in Portland. It's so important, therefore, to this city, because, in fact, even if the right wings, if the right wing has power and the corporate people own much of the media, when you look at the city of Portland, in fact, the agenda of the political institutions, like, let's say, the city council, who tried desperately to buy PGE and unfortunately failed, but in fact, it's that progressive movement that is actually setting the agenda of Portland, and at least part of it, and is constantly in motion and challenging corporate power. We really, KBOO is a great treasure. Without it in Portland, this would be a very different city. And people out there, I hope people appreciate how important KBOO is to you and to your organizations and to our whole community. The number here to, in fact, support KBOO and to be part of KBOO, to become a member, and then maybe a member on radio activist, because we have training programs, we're always looking for new programmers, is 503-232-8818. And with it, you can get a copy, I think there's still two left, of Hubris, the inside story of spin scandal and the war in Iraq. Pledge Central, how are we doing?
Oh, we're doing pretty well, but we could be doing better. We don't hear the phones ringing, and this is the time to make your call. You make your call during the pledge break, and then you can go back to listening uninterrupted. So call right now, 503-232-8818.
We're not at our goal yet. We'd really like to get to our goal and actually blow past it. You know, people talk about red states, blue states. There's a core in Portland that I admire, which is way beyond red and blue, unless you consider it the red of socialism and the black of anarchy. This is a state and a city with a long history of radical thought and radical deed. It's a wonderful place to live. I've lived in two other places, two major cities, New York and Washington, D.C., and I've never had the opportunity to see as many people that think and feel pretty much the way I do, as I have since I came to Portland and started listening to KBOO. 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. That's a long number. 1-877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
Thanks to Claire for renewing. Thanks to Joe from Troutdale, who is a new member, and Lori from Portland, who renewed. Thank you. 503-232-8818.
Thank you for that support. You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Monday morning, October 16th. We're halfway through it. I'm Denise Morris. I'm here with movie mole Jan Hocken. We are going to tackle the new film, The War Tapes. The War Tapes is a film directed by documentary filmmaker Deborah Scranton. And like the films Occupational Dreamland and Gunner Palace, The War Tapes looks at the war in Iraq through the eyes of the soldiers who are actually mired in this conflict. Scranton has this to say about her film, quote, "The War Tapes believes in empowering citizens to tell their own stories and believes citizen journalism can make amazing film," end quote. So rather than go to Iraq embedded with the New Hampshire Army National Guard, Scranton gave three soldiers small video cameras prior to their deployment to the Anaconda Army base in the very deadly Sunni Triangle. The film the men shot is supplemented by home front interviews with family, wives, the images are also, there are also other images that were captured by soldiers, photographs and other video images. And the filmmakers are hoping to, with this film, answer the question, what is war for the soldiers who live it? And they also seem to be, like, I think, the trappings of other, for other documentary filmmakers, trying to not make a political film, but to make something that's both not to be said objective, but also not to be said partisan. And that in itself is kind of a problematic concept when dealing with documentary and putting cameras in the hands of young men who are, have been clearly cultured through their, the process of going through the army, to see their role around the world in a particular way and to see people in a particular way.
In some ways, the film takes a very conventional approach at the beginning of getting, as you're saying, the idea that if you get closer to the action, closer to the palpable, hellish reality of war on the ground, you're closer to some truth about it. And of course, quite the opposite can be true, that people immersed too closely in a situation have trouble finding any perspective on it. And yet there's something compelling about the lived experience versus a more distant reading of what's going on. But she takes this also media entry point, a lot of media images and the close-ups and following the soldiers as they prepare. It's a very conventional narrative, but then the question is, where does it go from there? And it seems to me that the claim of it being nonpartisan centers on the key protagonists. There are three National Guardsmen whose stories unfold. It's organized around their stories. And one is quite critical of the war, and yet cynically so. Zach Brazzi, who's Lebanese, who's an interesting, probably the most interesting character, who bridges both worlds and speaks Arab and engages in some kind of resistance to the military by refusing to translate at times for them. But then the others are more either cynical or continue to kind of reorganize their support for these politics, the politics of war and foreign policy. So I think the fact that you get these soldiers from a range of perspectives is part of their claim, that it's not just a conversion experience where they all come out and join Veterans for Peace. In fact, there's none of that. And that perhaps was, I don't know how much the choices of the filmmaker determined the lack of any kind of political alternative at the end, other than kind of cynical retreat or a kind of a pro-war stance, but sobered by the realities on the ground.
Yeah, we're left with in the opening of the film. The first voice we hear is one of the soldiers who has a kind of more gruesome, macabre. He has an attachment to the real gory aspects of war, and is very descriptive about bodies and about death, and also seems to have enormous amount of anger. His first comment is, you know, "I want to kill." He's been keeping a journal. At the end of the film, we hear the young man who is from Lebanese origins say, you know, "I love the army. The only bad thing, the only bad thing about the army is you can't pick your war, and, you know, love your country, be suspicious of your government." So between that, there really isn't a lot, like you say, a lot of real resistance, minor resistance, but maintaining an attachment to the culture of war, to wanting to be a part of that fraternity, and just hoping that you got a better deal in the long run. And we should, you know, again say that these are National Guard. These are so-called citizen soldiers who end up over there, and who are not our army lifers in the same way. So maybe have had different training or more condensed training, and so there's, you know,
and it's quite clear they're ill prepared for what they see. But one could also say, well, the problem with this war is that we have too much reliance on the National Guard, you know, that they're not enough, quote, trained soldiers, or that this war is particularly an anomalous, that this is a crazy war as opposed to other wars, that we have to pick our wars. And he could be articulating that point of view, which is a very narrow critique of this. Well, should we be bombing Iran or North Korea?
Right, North Korea, yeah.
There is that kind of conservative critique of the war. I think part of what was progressive from a left perspective about this film was how much it drew out the role of subcontractors and the enormously obscene amounts of money that subcontractors, from Halliburton to all of the fast food industry that sells to the to the military there, and just this enormous profit being reaped by people remote from the ground with no mud and blood on their hands and cuffs, but and how the soldiers there see that and live that daily, eating crappy fast food and driving in trucks that, and even an alliance at times with the Iraqis who were hired to drive these Halliburton trucks with very little money and put in the crappy trucks without windows. And there are moments where you could see almost the beginning of a potential for an alliance with Iraqis, but that doesn't go very far.
No, we don't really actually see it evolve, but it is something that we don't see in films like Gunner Palace or Occupation Dreamland. We see these National Guard are really the keepers. They are the protector agents for the transferring of goods. And also, you know, there's a moment where we see that they have escorted these trucks that carry human waste, and they just go and basically dump it, you know, in some empty lot and joke about how the grass will be greener there. But
that was, by the way, a beautiful scene.
That
these guys talked about as a metaphor for the war. All of the, it's like phenomenal amounts of poop.
Yes.
That are disposed of on the field that is an image that's quite gripping and conveys quite a bit about what's being done to the country.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, the film is certainly, I think that people will certainly enjoy, I shouldn't use that word about a film about war, but that there is something to gain, certainly. I think we're not going to get historical perspective, and progressives can make sense of this film in a way that perhaps others may not. I mean, this is a whole other conversation about how a film like this can be used in different ways to support different kinds of arguments or different perspectives, but certainly worth taking a look at.
I also think that the film departed from some of the more conventional Hollywood films that circulate in the main theaters, and this is circulating more in independent theaters such as Hollywood Theater, which is a collective and very much like KABU. It's part of what preserves some diverse perspectives and alternative perspectives on what's going on in the world through film and documentary. But the war tapes also undermines the typical resolution where the guys come home and to a place of restorative peace, the home as refuge. You have the homecoming. And of course, it sacrifices and does not take up all the Iraqis who have no home to return to at all, because everything, so much has been obliterated. But nonetheless, as you follow the soldiers home, the National Guardsmen, you see that the home is not a place of peace and restoration. These guys are quite, are really on, some of them on some level have been so traumatized, they're kind of dead from this experience, and they don't count as the casualties of war. And I think that part was quite compelling.
I think so. I think that the homecomings really did draw out that important fact or that important element. So
yeah, the wives and girlfriends and mothers could not heal these guys.
Right, and may actually lose them and lose their relationships. Jan, you did point out that the War Tapes is playing at the Hollywood Theater, a collective volunteer-run theater. We often make our choices for reviews based on what we might see at the Hollywood, and there's plenty going on there and great opportunities to support other businesses like KABU.
Which today is the choice, the choice for support.
Right.
Community collective.
Because we do this just a few times a year, and the Hollywood is open, all year, I think. So
not that we're competing with the Hollywood Theater.
No, not at all. The number to call to pledge and support KABU and the Old Mole Variety Hour is 503-232-8818. We have been talking about the War Tapes. It will be playing through Thursday, if you'd like to check it out. And what's happening out there
Pledge Central.
Hey, this is Ed. I'd like to thank the Movie Moles for doing the wonderful work that they do. In my other capacity, in my other hat as movie reviewer here at KBOO, I would have to say I concur 100% with your discussion about the war tapes. It's a brilliant and gripping and very, very sad movie. And if anybody thinks that war is a good idea, they should look at this thing. It's much different than Gunner's Palace, which last year's documentary about the war, which is a bunch of young rock and roll kids in the war. This is really much more serious. 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. I'm here with my friend Elizabeth. We have good news, Elizabeth.
We have great news. We went over the our goal. For the Old Mole. That's great. We know that people are listening. We know that people love the Old Mole, and people have called to give support. We want to thank some of those people, with all of those people. Holly from Portland is a new member. Thank you, Holly. Trove and Brenda from Portland are renewing. Lynn from Beaver Creek, Nan from Portland, and Dimitri from Portland. All of these folks are, no, Dimitri is new. The rest of them are renewing their pledge, confirming their support of KBOO, because they know that that's where the news source is.
We love that. We love renewing members.
We love renewing, and we love the new members.
Yes.
Yep. Both. I mean, it fills the space. It keeps us going. 503-232-8818. Just because we went over to our goal doesn't mean that we're quitting.
No, let's keep going, because you have to develop momentum. And the fact is, we always chronically run a little behind at the station on the pledge drives. We're always a little behind where we want to be. And if we go ahead, we will end this thing early. That's the thing about pledge drives, is that when we reach our goals, we reach our goals. This is maybe not the best forum to talk about this, but Air America just declared bankruptcy. Now, if you listen to Air America, as I do quite a lot, you discover that they have these obnoxious ads on, and even selling you obnoxious ads, and even cutting their segments into little chunks so you really can't get a discussion going about anything, they're still declaring bankruptcy. We, on the other hand, are doing very well, thank you. And the reason is that we have great listeners who support us.
That's true. And we only come to you twice a year to ask you for money. We're not every 10 minutes interrupting to ask for money for something that doesn't even relate to what you're listening to. When we come on, we're definitely staying within, we're asking you for money to support the programs that you're hearing. So that's direct. You're involved in the information that you're getting. So support us now by calling 503-232-8818. Keep this unique programming going. 1-877-500-KBOO.
Now, $120. Let's talk about $120 a year. Now, that seems like a lot of money. If you ask me for $120 now, I'd probably have to sell my car. But at $10
a
month, for my car, yeah, thank heaven. At least I could live in it if I had to. $120 a year, $10 a month right away is not so bad. $2.50 a week, it boils down to 33 cents a day. Now that's less than your latte habit. It's even less than your Oregonian habit if you read the paper every day. So $120 a year, if you go through electronic funds transfer, it's removed painlessly from your checking account every month, and you don't even have to write a check, and it shows up on your bank statement. That's a great way to go, because you don't forget to write the check, and it gives us a cash flow, so we don't just get the big infusions of cash at the pledge drives.
Right, and if you're giving 60 and you've realized that it really is relatively painless to have that $5 taken out, why don't you think about doubling that to 120? Or if you're giving 120 and you're still not really feeling the pinch, maybe you should be just a little bit uncomfortable to know, just to remind yourself that you're supporting the thing that you love and the thing that you need. So bring it up another $5 a month,
$180 a year is 49 cents a day. 49 cents a day.
That's really not very much when you think of it.
503-232-8818. 503-232-8818. Outside the Portland metro area, or... I'm sorry, are we still on here? Yes? Okay. 1-877-500-5266 and KBOO.FM.
Okay. I think we're still going. Yeah, we're getting a lot of back talk here.
Okay.
But, yeah, folks, we've had great support for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and we want to keep that support going all day. Let's just say we're priming the pump. We're halfway to our overall goal, and we're halfway through the pledge, the membership drive. So let's keep the momentum going. Let's pick it up, as Ed says. If we move this along faster, then the pledge drive is over faster, and we're back to online full-time information, music, all the kinds of things that you support because you're listening. And if you're not supporting them with your money, now's the time to make that change. 503-232-8818.
And I don't know how many, are there any Hubris books? Oh, okay. That's it. Let's go back to the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Yes, this has been the Old Mole Variety Hour, and we thank everyone for your support. And to our, to our dedicated volunteers on the show and off the show, and we will be back next week for more.
This is Community Radio, KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Genesis Juice, producing organic fruit and vegetable juices preserved in glass, including ginger lemonade, apple ginger, herbal fruit tonics, and more. Information and where to buy at genesisjuicecorp.com. Welcome to the Food Show for October 2006. My name is Bruce.
I'm Kate.
Ooh.
I'm Marlise.
I'm Miriam.
And welcome to everyone who's listening. This time we're going to keep it a little lighter. We will have kids talking about food at school, grown-ups talking about eating wild game, sounds from a pie-eating contest for all ages, and a local woman named Nana talking about the noodles she makes and sells. And music. A new CD has come into the KBOO Music Library, and it's full of songs about food. It's called One Meatball. And here's the title track, introduced and sung by the late folk singer Dave Van Ronk.
This is a song that I used to have to do this every time I got on stage just about. I got to a point where I hated it. And I just flat out refused to do it. For years, nay, decades. Until I was, just about a year ago, I was doing a show, a nice little club, up in Mendocino County. I was in the dressing room, and I don't know who must have left this behind, another performer, but it was a printout, computer printout, and it was the result of an inquiry and a study into the origins of the song One Meatball. One Meatball was just one of those tunes that, as I say, I did to death. But I picked this thing up and I took a look at it, and I had never really paid much notion where the hell this song had come from. I had learned it from Josh White, who actually had a hit recording of it. But it turns out the song originates back in the 1850s, and it began, well, it started out as an Italian comic one-act opera called Una Pesce Balla, which means the lone fish ball. And there it was, happily untranslated, until there was a dinner party at the home of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And at this dinner party was not only Longfellow, but James Russell Lowell and Francis James Child, the collector of the Child ballads. The three of them proceeded to get drunk and wrote this song, based on the Italian Una Pesce Balla. Well, come on, I had to sing it again. I mean, anything that these three sticks had put together under those circumstances should not go unsung. Up and down, found an eating place in town. Looked the menu through and through to see what 15 cents could do. One meatball, he could afford but one meatball. He told the waiter near at hand to sip
simple dinner he had planned. Well, the guests were startled, one and all, to hear that waiter loudly call, "One meatball, one meatball." If this here jet was one meatball, the little man felt ill at ease. Said, "Some bread, sir, if you please." Will the waiter hollered down the hall, "You get
sex." Well, sorry about that. We won't complete the song in our own voices, but we do want to tell you that this is actually a very good CD, and it's combined with a cookbook. Kate, can you tell us who put this together?
Is my mic up? Christine Lavin put this together, and there is a variety of artists on here. It's called One Meatball, the album, and the cookbooklet. And the artists who are on here include Pete Seeger, Marcy Heisler, The Accidentals, Alan Michelli, Ray Jessel, Jeff Daniels, Julie Gold, Mary Jo Monday, Tom Paxton. There's another Jeff Daniels. Let's see, there's one. I can't remember. But it is an album and a cookbook. And so not only is there a recipe for blackberry trifle, but chicken kofta and carrot matzo ball soup.
All right. And this CD and book, by the way, the book is wirebound, so you can lay these recipes out on the counter while you're making them. This is available to members, renewing members and new members. This is the KBOO Fall Membership Drive, and it's this is the only food show during the drive since we're on only once a month.
Let's give them the number.
503-232-8818,
or if you are outside of that local calling, it's 1-877-500-5266. Now, I heard this morning that 877 is toll-free, but it's better than 800 because it's got 77 more.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. That wouldn't escape me. But I must say, this little cookbook is very interesting. There's not only a carrot matzo ball soup. There is Aunt Esther's chicken soup, very classic chicken soup recipe. But there are also things like, we just saw when we were looking through this, guacamole for the dead. Now, I thought that was rather interesting. It has cumin in it. That's
it's
something.
Because of the Grateful Dead.
Oh.
The Grateful Dead.
Why didn't
and
I think
what
of that?
What are some of the tunes in there? Miriam's got the cookbook in front of her.
Yeah, I've been focusing on the recipes.
Right, the recipes are there, but there's some awesome music there, too.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think we'll probably get a comment on that from Ed Goldberg and Elizabeth Attlee, who are joining us from Membership
Central. Hey, good morning out there. How you doing?
We're doing okay. How about you? Are we getting some calls at 503-232-8818?
Well, let's see. We have a $420 goal. Is that true for this segment? We don't know yet.
Well, let's make it 800.
Let's make it
800.
Get
them those calls in here. 1-877-500-5266. I know that people are listening outside of the local calling area.
Yeah, that's why we're not getting the calls. It's because people are listening. So now's your chance to call. Mm-hmm. If you support this kind of programming, if you love the food show, show us your love. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
And we have ways to sweeten the pot. I suppose that's an apropos metaphor for the food show.
It is.
Farmer John's cookbook, The Real Dirt on Vegetables. I don't know if anybody remembers the Farmer John film.
We interviewed Farmer John right here on the food show in June.
There you go.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who's had an interesting life, but is also an organic farmer. So for a $75 pledge, you can get the Farmer John cookbook, The Real Dirt on Vegetables. And all you need to do is call 503-232-8818.
And we only have one. We only have one copy of that.
$75. Now, $75 out. If you stretch it out over the year, is only 21 cents a day. 21 cents a day. So you get KBOO, you get the book. What's not to like?
And something else for a $75 minimum pledge: the CD and cookbook One Meatball. Well, this looks terrific. One Meatball is a CD compilation of songs about food contained in a wirebound book of recipes contributed by the musical artists, produced by Christine Lavin on Appleseed Records. This album cookbook book features 21 songs by notable artists, including Pete Seeger, Sally Fingerett, Jonathan Edwards, Dave Van Ronk, and more. Recipes vary from Mexican wedding cookies to Grandma Ruth's custard pie and Betsy Feeney's salsa. Doesn't it just make your mouth water?
Mm, it sure does.
Yeah, my grandfather used to sing One Meatball to me when I was a kid. It's a depression song. It's a great song. And you get music and you get recipes. 503-232-8818. I know people listen to the show because they ask me about it. People say, don't you have a food show on cable? I say, yeah, it's a really good food show, too. And they say, yeah, I try to catch that whenever I can. Well, if you're one of those people that talks to me about that, now's the time to step up to the plate, get the double meaning there. And give us a call. If you live outside the Portland metro area, if you live even in Vancouver, right across the river, 1-877-500-5266. And if you're listening to us in Chicago or St. Louis or Baltimore or New York, all you need to do online, kboo.fm.
Yeah, and you know, a $75 minimum pledge that for both of the gifts that we just promoted, that's just a little over $6 a month. And you know, that's painless.
It really, really is, even for me.
Even for you.
Yeah. So listen, now's the time. You know, the phones are not ringing, and the reason the phones are not ringing is because you're deeply involved in what we're saying. But if you call now, then you'll be able to listen to the content
of the
food show.
So get deeply involved in this. 503-232-8818. Let your fingers do the walking. Punch out those numbers. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO if you're outside of our metropolitan area. Yeah.
Well, since you said let your fingers do the walking, I'll say operators are standing by.
Ed and Elizabeth, I've also experienced people coming up to me and saying they heard the food show on KBOO, and this is a new thing for me. I haven't had a regular scheduled show until this one. I've done the occasional interview and so on. But people coming up to you and saying, I heard this report on KBOO on such and such. There was this farmer who's also an artist, and I'll say, that was Farmer John. That was us. And it's kind of fun, especially at the farmer's market. I get into conversations like that, both with vendors there and with just members of the public. And the response is usually very positive, which is a great thing.
How does it feel to be a star?
We have to disguise ourselves when we're on the street.
Yeah, I'll never be as big a star as you, Ed.
That's true. 503-232-8818. 1-877-500.
You have to perfect the accent.
Well, I used to
what
have
do you mean, accent. I don't have an accent. Everybody else does.
Yeah,
I used to have a similar one. My deep dark secret is that I grew up not far at all from Ed, probably about 15 miles. But I'm a recovering New Yorker.
Those Flatlanders from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no, right. This is
we're Flatlanders from Long Island,
yeah.
Actually.
Long Island, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Where do you shop? 503-232-8818.
Okay, we're going to get back to Ed and Elizabeth in a few minutes.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, Kate, we've got something now?
Well, yes. Speaking of Italians, I have met a young woman who produces Nana's Noodles. And Nana is her grandmother. Sarah is her name. And I think the CD will tell the story.
My name is Sarah Beth Cinzoni Johnson, and I am the owner and operator of Nana's Noodles. I make handmade Italian pasta, which I learned from my grandma, who I call Nana, which is Italian for grandma. And I've been making pasta for over 20 years, and my grandma taught me everything I know.
And when this woman says over 20 years, she's not even 30 years old, so this means she's been making pasta since she was a little kid. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing?
The first thing that I do when I make pasta is I put out the flour and make the little funnel in the middle, put the eggs in there, and just use a fork and you beat the eggs and slowly knead it all together. And that takes anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes depending on how many eggs and how much dough I'm making. And then you let the dough rest for about 20 to 30 minutes and then cut small pieces off, which I then roll through the machine.
And that's what you're doing right now? You're cutting off that small piece?
Yep, I'm just cutting off a piece, flouring it up, and smooshing it down a bit so that it will go through the pasta machine at the largest setting. And there are about 7 or 8 settings, depending on which type of machine you have, and you go through each setting at least twice. And that will make this small piece of dough, which is probably about 3 or 4 inches long, into something about maybe 3 feet long once it's all done and as thin as it'll go.
Sarah has been making pasta before I got here today, and I see a couple of ribbons, those 3 or 4 foot pieces that she was just mentioning.
What I do is I sheet out the pasta as thin as it'll go, and then I allow the sheets to hang and dry for a few moments. They need to dry for at least 10 minutes before you cut them. But there's lots of subtleties involved. It's not just, you know, throwing the dough together and rolling it through a machine. It has a lot to do with the moisture in the air, the moisture in the dough. You have to know the right consistency, and then the right amount of moisture still in the pasta once it's in the long sheet form before you cut it. You don't want it to be too wet because then it will take a long time to dry and it won't dry as well. You don't want it to be too dry because then it won't cut correctly and it won't continue drying correctly. So there's kind of an art form that you just kind of learn as you go. That's what I was lucky enough to have my grandma teach me.
What brought you to the idea that you might do this professionally?
The idea really dawned on me last fall. I worked in a lot of jobs doing sales and different things that I didn't really enjoy and working for different people. And I just thought to myself one day it came. I said, I'm going to make noodles and sell them. I'm going to start my own pasta business. And throughout the last 9-10 months, I've just gotten everything together. And I actually asked for my grandma's permission and asked if I could use, you know, Nonna in the title of my business. And she became so excited and she just looked at me and she said, you better do this. This is something I know you really need to do.
What kind of flour do you use in your pasta?
I use unbleached flour. Anybody that has like an old Italian grandma, that's pretty much all they use. They don't use a wheat or a semolina or anything like that. It's just the unbleached wheat flour, eggs, and water, and that's all I put in the pasta.
And you have another process that you're going to go through here now?
I do. So now I have the sheet of pasta, which is a few feet long, and I'm going to cut it down into smaller sheets that are probably a little less than a foot, and then I will run it through the machine to cut it to the different widths. So I have everything is just as thin, and then I run it through the machine to make linguine or angel hair, and I actually hand cut all my fettuccine, which is a bit wider. Always been my favorite to have a wide noodle, so I decided to make something really wide. So at this point, I'm going to take one of these sheets and run it through the machine.
Sarah is cutting using an ordinary kitchen knife that's handy for her to use, and now we get to hear the squeaky pasta machine. I remember making pasta with my kids when they were little, and we had a similar little pasta machine. I wasn't as good at it.
This comes with a lot of practice. As I've said, over 20 years, and then in the last few months, it's been even more. This is the angel hair setting, and it is, I think, the squeakiest. So sometimes it gets a little stuck in the machine, and you just kind of have to roll with it. That's just the way that it goes. So you just get as much as you can out of each piece. And just keep rolling. And so that's basically the whole process. It just takes a lot of time, a lot of patience, and knowing the right consistencies of the dough when they're ready to go, when they need to dry longer.
When you put the pasta through the cutter and you have the scraps, can you put those back together again into another blob and make another sheet with them?
Not necessarily, because the pieces do get cut in strange ways. What I do sometimes is I put them together, let them dry, and then crush them and make what's called quadratini, which is the small pieces. It's actually called that because it means basically four corners, and you use that for soups and different things like that. Sometimes I do make the quadratini.
I can imagine this beautiful, elaborate dish layered with pasta and vegetables. How do you like to prepare yours?
I generally eat it with a little bit of olive oil or butter and some Parmesan. You have to use the real Parmesan cheese that you grate. I just had a really great friend who's a chef who made this cream reduction sauce with mushrooms and garlic. But actually, one of my favorite things is making lasagna with the noodles. So generally, I'll dry the lasagna here and then take it home and make it.
How long do they generally need to cook?
It depends on the type of noodle. The angel hair only takes about a minute and a half. The linguine takes about 2 or 3 minutes, and the fettuccine 3, maybe 4 minutes. I always stress that to everybody that buys it. It's on each package, but people don't realize how quickly it cooks. And one of the nice things, too, about dry pasta versus wet pasta is wet pasta kind of retains a chewiness after you cook it that this pasta doesn't have at all. The noodles just kind of melt in your mouth because they're so thin and they're so delicate.
Why should I buy you homemade noodles when I can go buy my noodles from the bigger pasta company?
Basically, the real reason is because they're so thin, and sometimes you can find thin noodles at the store, but generally they've come from Italy or something like that, so they've been in a box for a couple of weeks, a couple of months. I make my pasta every week, so you buy it within a couple of days of me making it, so it's really fresh, and anybody that has never had handmade pasta can't really understand how different it is until you actually eat it. And another thing is buying local.
You sell at the Hillsdale Market. You sell at the market on Thursday at the EcoTrust building. Is there somewhere else that a person can buy your noodles?
Well, the Thursday market has just finished, but I will hopefully be at the Saturday market at PSU for a few times in late October, November, possibly early December. And I'm going to try and do a few holiday markets around town as well.
And then are you going to take the winter off?
I'll probably take the middle of December until the middle of January off, but Hillsdale goes every other week through till next April when it starts, I think, again in May every week. So I'll definitely be at that market.
Is there something else you might like to add to this?
Well, I just want to say that my product is totally different because I have made it my whole life. But the most important thing, really, for me is to thank all of my family and my friends.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, the food show attended a game show recently. No, not Jeopardy, but Wild About Game, a trade show about how to cook things like venison and buffalo. What? You haven't cooked a pheasant yet? Here's some thoughts from those who have and those who haven't.
When I was young, and people would sometimes bring us elk and whatnot, but just since I got together with my girlfriend, we started cooking more.
Is it, for someone who's never cooked it, are there any, I mean, it seems like almost a different planet. It's like
it seems more intimidating. I think that's just, I don't know. I don't think it's that much harder.
Are there any tricks? I mean, sometimes you think, like someone like myself looks at game and thinks it's tougher, you have to cook it longer, you can't get it tender, or you can't...
I guess it really depends on what kind of meat you're cooking. You know, like, they have the venison, and it's really good, and it's not rough at all, or gamey. So I guess it just kind of depends on what you're cooking.
How do you like to cook it best?
I barbecue everything. So
do you put sauce on it?
Usually salt and pepper, sometimes some barbecue sauce.
You need to think of it in simple terms. What we're doing here is just salt and pepper.
Salt you don't pepper. Have any sauce on it?
No sauce at all, just salt and pepper. And see how it's on the rare side.
Now, I don't have a problem with that because I like rare meat, uh-huh. But there's some folks who would look at that and say they would get sick that way or that's right. Too undercooked. What would you tell someone like that?
Then I wouldn't recommend them eating it, no. It's not like any other meat in that the fat content in the product is very different from beef. So beef has intramuscular fat. Most wild game has, like, very, very little fat. So if you overcook any of the meat, it's going to give you a bad experience because it's going to be very livery tasting because there's not that fat in the meat to keep it moist. So you want to cook it on the rare side. It could be medium rare, which is fine, but you don't want to... anyone that prefers their meat to be well done, I wouldn't recommend them using wild game at all.
I haven't cooked game before. I've known a few people who have given me tastes of game foods at their homes and in their restaurants and really enjoyed it, and I wanted to learn more about it. I also came to see Fergus Henderson. He's here from London, and one thing that may not be known is that he has Parkinson's disease, and so do I, so we have that in common. And when I went to London in late June, I went to his restaurant, the St. John restaurant in London, and had a fabulous lunch and met him and really enjoyed seeing that he's a man who does not let his disease define him. He's a successful chef and he's a very nice guy, so I came to see him too. So.
Wow, that's very excellent. Did you have game at the restaurant in London?
We had bone marrow salad, which is his specialty. He cooks bone marrow and then serves it with toast and parsley salad, and you scoop the bone marrow out. It sounds really disgusting, but it was actually quite delicious. It was a good surprise. And then I had duck kidneys to try for an entree. So that was an adventure for me, and it was okay. It was different, but I was game to try it. So
well, good for you. Do you like to cook?
Yes.
What sorts of things do you cook currently?
Oh gosh, my husband and I like to experiment in cooking. He's retired, so we try anything. We make lots of soups. We have. We mostly cook chicken and fish, salmon, cedar plank salmon, grilled vegetables, things like that. We all kinds of things. We'll try anything.
Do you think cooking game is intimidating?
Well, I've never tried it, so yes. But I'm going to try it now. So.
What do you think you might start with?
I think I'm going to try pheasant first. It looks like it's something that can be managed easily by a home cook.
Why do you think that?
Because pheasant, I think, itself is a tender, delicious cut of meat anyway, so you don't need to do too much to make it taste better. So it should be easy to prepare. I'll let you know.
What do you think you might try as a second attempt?
Oh, gosh. Maybe buffalo. I've had buffalo, and that's really good, too. So we'll
try
that.
Are you worried about a lot about overcooking? People I've spoken to here said it's really easy to overcook some meats because they don't have as much fat as some other ones do.
Oh, that's true of lots of things like chicken and fish, and you have to really watch it. Overcooking is the worst thing you can do, and it's the hardest thing to prevent. So you just have to cook with concentration. Don't have a crowd of people talking to you at the same time. So.
Morgan, over here, you look lonely. What's going on? Oh, you're stuffing your quail breast. Wow. With fennel and sage and secret ingredients I wasn't here to watch. Now I'll never know.
I did not cook for a long time, and I'm just starting to cook again, and I was interested in what they were cooking and how to do it here.
In your previous cooking life, did you cook game?
No. No. I wasn't very adventuresome. And now I've become quite adventuresome and interested in different things.
What would you start with in game? What would you, like, try first to cook?
Probably pheasant. It seems to be the most popular here and probably a little bit easier, I think, than other things. I don't think I'd start with buffalo. It's a little apprehensive for me. I'd be a little apprehensive to try that.
Because?
Not for any particular, just because I'm not familiar with it, I guess. And I don't cook a lot of red meat.
Do you know how to prepare pheasant?
No. No. It looks like another bird to me. So, and that's one thing I'd be interested in learning more about here.
What do you sort of hope to get out of this? Some recipes or ideas?
A glass of wine.
That sounds like an excellent suggestion.
Would you like to join me?
Well, that sounded interesting. Miriam, thanks for doing that piece. And I think we'll have more from that All About Game show next month. This is one of the things that we do for the listeners, is we go to events like this. This past weekend, actually, several of us went to an open house at a nursery, One Green World, that actually the owner has been on the Dirt Bag, the gardening show here on KBOO. Not too many radio stations have a gardening show either.
I got to eat pawpaws for the first time.
Pawpaws are great. And we'll be putting together a report for next month's show probably on that. But we try and introduce you to foods that you may not have eaten before as a way of just broadening your horizons. That's what community radio does. And
broaden our horizons, 503-232-8818. Elizabeth?
A lot more, too, I'm afraid. My mouth is watering as I'm listening to all of this. And,
yes, we're very broadened by what we eat these days.
Very broadened. Especially those noodles. My gosh, I could just feel myself growing as I listen to the noodle.
Oh, but they're so
cranking.
Good. Little vegetables with them.
Well, you know, Elizabeth, growing up in Long Island, which has always been revealed here about me, in my area... we had our school district head cook was named Angela Labolita, and I've had a lot of noodles in my life, and
none
as noodles sound better.
It's sort of a pasta life experience, huh?
Yeah. Oh God.
Oh.
Oh.
If you like that, yeah.
503-232-8818. I don't want to break into your discourse, but the phones need to start ringing. 503-232-8818. I'd like to thank David of Beaverton, who called in as a renewing member.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David. And we need more people to call in from Beaverton, from Portland, from Salem.
from anywhere, from Southwest Washington and Vancouver.
Massachusetts, Long Island.
Exactly right. 1-877-500-5266 for those people, or online at kbu.fm.
Now, yeah. I know someone got the Farmer John book. We just had the one copy.
Right.
But we do have the one meatball cookbook and CD and lots of other good things.
Yeah.
You can, when you call in, you can just ask what kind of books and CDs and other thank you gifts we have. But the main thing is, please support community radio. You wouldn't be getting this information if KBOO wasn't here.
How true. And we do have a couple other books we can talk to about here. One is the America's Test Kitchen Family Cookbook for a $120 minimum pledge. One, that's $10 a month, taken from your bank account from the electronic funds transfer. It's a revised edition of over 1,200 America's Test Kitchen tested recipes.
And for a $60 minimum pledge, that's $5 a month. You know, $5 a month figures out to $60 a year, or 16 cents a day. Okay? It's called Kitchen Quick Tips, Techniques and Shortcuts of the Curious Cook. It includes such really amazing pieces of information like, can you soundproof your coffee grinder, and how do you avoid scraping fingers on a grater? My mother always said that if she didn't get some blood in it, she didn't really love us. 503-232-8818. Outside of town, 1-877-500-5266. Anywhere online, kbu.fm.
And I liked hearing that familiar sound of the pasta grinder. Where else are you going to hear that? And that just adds to the sort of, you know, the anticipation of the noodles that are going to come rolling off of that. It's just really fun to listen to a program where your mouth is watering. And
Elizabeth, you sound like a lady who has made pasta.
I have made pasta. And, in fact, listening to that, I'm thinking, you know, it's been a while since I've gotten that old machine out. It's time to make some old homemade noodles again.
Yeah, my grandmother did it with just a rolling pin and a wooden board, and she didn't have no pasta maker. So she made luction for soup with just a rolling pin and a board.
Yum. 503-232-8818. I don't think we have any pasta, but we've got lots of other things, and we have radio, 1-877-500-5266.
That's an interesting thing to think about, because if you can afford cable, you know about something like the Food Network, which is 24 hours a day of nothing but food. But if you don't watch TV, if you don't have cable TV, where do you go for information like that? And the great place to come is the KBOO for all kinds of news and public affairs. But the Foodie Show is great. You know, I listen to it. I'm very happy that you had something about cooking game, because around here we're lucky to get it from time to time. And let's show your appreciation for a show like this by giving a call at 503-232-8818.
Well, Ed, you say you listen to the show. Here's a quiz. Do you remember the piece we did when we interviewed Dave from Pickleopolis, the local pickle maker?
Wow, you know, I do remember that.
Okay, and how about Dave of Dave's Bread, the guy who came out of prison and into the bakery and is doing a wonderful business selling bread made of organic grains?
I might have missed that show.
Okay.
Okay, too bad. Well, we also covered the bread festival at the Hollywood Market and some other farmer markets, and we've had Food Not Bombs on.
We are really lucky in this area to have wonderful farmers markets and local produce. We have food co-ops. Long before the big stores got interested in selling organic and healthy foods, environmentally sustainable foods, we had that here in Portland. So I know there's a community out there that really appreciates what you do here.
Pam appreciates it, and so does Denise. Both of them are from Portland, and both of them renewed their membership in KBOO. And I'm sure that they love listening to the food show, and they're probably just thinking of the next meal as they listen to you. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-KBOO.
What's different from other stations? So we had a couple of guests who had written a report for Mercy Corps about helping local immigrants from other countries who are now in the Portland area and want to go into farming, a project that Mercy Corps is taking on. And I don't think you would have heard about this project on other stations. Mercy Corps is a wonderful organization, and they do get on the air. I think we probably, because of KBOO's values, if you look in our charter, you'll find that for our public affairs programming, we have 8 values of peace and justice and environmentalism and so on. And I was happy to do that interview, frankly. I interviewed a buffalo rancher 2-3 years ago now. We've done the show for 3 years, and we were preceded for 2 years by our friend Jade. The buffalo rancher didn't only talk about how good buffalo is for you and good. It's also good for the environment. He talked about the business and talked about the big buffalo ranchers like Ted Turner versus the little guys like him. And that was informative, too. And you'll only get that on KBOO. And if you want to support and continue listening to that kind of thing, please call us now at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO or online at kboo.fm. All right, right now we will give you a little more of our programming. The next thing, Marlies has a piece. Marlies, tell us about this.
Well, I wanted to say this is something about local food. You know, we talk a lot about how we can help with local markets and with local people making all the wonderful food that we have. That is the amazing thing about the food show, is that we do go out into the community and talk to everyone. And this is about local school children. And really, actually, throughout the United States, there are a lot of things about the school lunch program. And so I went to talk to a bunch of school kids who are participating in a project called Project Feed that helps them get healthy food in their belly. Here it is.
I don't like school lunch.
School cafeteria and food sucks. It tastes like crap.
Well, the mac and cheese is made out of rubber, first of all. Second of all, they microwave the ham sandwiches in the plastic in the microwave.
If I have to buy lunch, I usually eat the peanut butter and jelly sandwich in a plastic bag, because everything else is pretty much like fake.
Well, it is really good.
While there are varying opinions about the quality of school lunches, parents, educators, and communities are working together to improve not only the nutritional value of school lunch, but also enhance the curriculum surrounding it. Food-based ecological education design, or Project Feed, is one such program in Portland. The project's focus is to integrate academic achievement with healthy food habits and to bring the lunchroom into the garden and back again. Chad Hunnell is the Learning Garden Lab Manager at Lane Community Center in Southeast Portland.
Okay, the Feed Project is a partnership between Portland Public Schools, Portland State University, and the City of Portland. All the kids have their own garden beds they've designed. They're starting all their own plants here in the greenhouse and planting them out. It's all food and herb production, mostly food, and the kids got to choose what plants they're planting.
Most importantly, many of the children from the area's schools are on board with the program and its goals.
For the feed thing, we're going to take like healthier food, or not just healthier, but like better. And so we're going to take that. Like at Abernathy, they're having a French chef cook all their meals. I know, but they're trying it out in Abernathy. If it goes well, then we're going to have it at Buckman.
As one child mused about where he thinks school lunch originates,
I think it comes from space.
Ashley, an intern from Lewis and Clark College, emphasized why understanding the origins of food is such a top priority for the feed program.
Everybody eats, so everybody should know where their food comes from or understand how to make food and how to grow food. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's, yeah, innately human, definitely.
They're going to grow over the summer, and we're going to have blueberries
in the fall.
Yeah,
like this summer. So they can go in the school's cafeteria, so we have, like, healthier food and things.
Yeah.
While children plant safe and healthy food for their school lunches during visits to the learning gardens and local farms, they're also provided with the opportunity to interact with vast ecological systems they may not otherwise be exposed to. Corey Longstreet, Educational Coordinator for Jean's Farm in Southeast Portland, explains.
At Jean's Farm, we have students who come out monthly, and so we see them repeatedly throughout the year. We've seen about 600 students repeatedly, and they come and do different activities like watershed restoration. They mapped our watershed system and created a song line to go with that, and then they planted native Oregon plants, and we also have them planting in the fields and tending the fields and learning about soil ecology, composting, the whole ecology of the farm, and learning about global and local food systems.
Carrie Steltz, a former faculty member at Western Culinary Institute and a PSU graduate in the Leadership in Ecology, Culture, and Learning Department, also worked with the children at Jean's Farm.
We also built an outdoor cob oven. We were baking biscuits last season and roasting pumpkins and roasting pumpkin seeds, and they were just really excited and involved in it.
And the kids have their own opinions about the challenges of working the soil.
So my hands were itching all day.
My hands kept getting kind of itchy a little. Also, with the dirt on the hands, it's this big thing. I apparently dug a really deep hole, and I'm amazed that you can actually dig that deep of a hole.
I don't really like breathing manure and everything. It's not that good. It doesn't smell good at all.
I think it makes your shoes dirty.
When speaking with the children, one can't help but be impressed by their knowledge of the ingredients of their food and how the food is processed.
It's just really gross, and it has like hydrogenated oils and high fructose corn syrups, and it's just really bad for you.
After all the itchy hands, grungy fingernails, smelly manure, and dirty feet, one student summarized the value of growing one's own food.
It's weird because, you know, like when you do go and take a grape from like your own garden that you made by yourself, you're like, that tastes good, that's really good. But when you go to the store, it's like, it's okay. It is easier to go to the store, but I don't think it's very, very good.
Projects like Feed, Learning Gardens, and Farm to School, recognized as food activist Alice Waters stated, the most neglected schoolroom is the lunchroom. They seek to fill not only the bellies of school children, but also to offer a more varied menu of dirt-digging intellectual and multicultural satisfaction.
Marlies, thank you. That was just the latest in quite a series of pieces that we've done on kids and food in school.
Your community connection.
Yeah. If you support this kind of programming, please call us and support this show and all of KBOO at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO. We did an interview with a couple of folks in Berkeley, California, when that school district was the first to have kids growing food and then cooking it in the school. And we want to continue with that.
Just really interesting, too, that there are so many groups of people that work together to make these programs possible. Everyone from, you know, the city to the university to the teachers, the parents, the children.
Community gardens.
And the chefs.
And
the gardeners. I mean, it is amazing how this program really unites the community. And I think that's one of the things that the food show and KBOO does as well.
We are your community connection. 503-232-8818. We need to hear the phone swing. 1-877-500-5266. Elizabeth?
Hey, you know, we have an $840 goal, and we're about...
Well, they did double it on us, didn't they?
That was your fault, Kate.
Yeah, that's right. Asking you shall
receive.
Always
my fault. I'm very powerful.
Yes. Aren't we all around here?
So where are we at now?
Well, you know, I would have to say we're about at $110.
We're looking for people to call. Where is everybody here?
I understand that. 503-232-8818. I'd like to thank Pam, a renewer from Portland. We have a thank you gift. This is kind of an interesting one because it's also a local business. This is a $25 gift certificate to Matlock's Hot Dog Cart, which is located at Southwest 4th, on the courthouse, Main and Salmon, Southwest 4th, that area. It features 9 kinds of hot dogs, including German,
wow,
Italian, Polish, and Chicago style, which you usually need a crane to lift, as I recall. 12 free condiments. So again, that's for a $60 minimum pledge. Okay, now here's the deal. $60, which is, you know, pretty much nothing. It's $5 a month on electronic funds transfer. And you get a $25 gift certificate.
Such a deal.
And you become a member of the KBOO community. Like, what's not to like? 503-232-8818. Outside of town, 1-877-500-5266. Anywhere in the known universe, kboo.fm.
And how many hot dogs can you get for $25?
A few anyway, I would guess.
You'd probably take your friends.
Take your friends. If you're working in an office downtown that's right there by the courthouse, take them over to the courthouse and treat them all to lunch.
Yeah. Well, this reminds me of another report that we did when I believe it was Kate and me and our colleague Grace went downtown at lunchtime, and we surveyed a whole bunch of food carts.
Food carts. Yeah,
I don't think that one was there at the time, but
it was in front of the courthouse, and we probably might not have gone there. We might have to go.
Yeah, you can only get. We got to about 10 carts downtown in just 1 hour. It was really rough work. By the way, if you would like to volunteer at KBOO and join us on this show, we're always looking for new folks and new ideas, too, because this is community radio. It isn't just us putting it out there and you listening. Please do become involved. It does cost a certain amount to do this. We paid for our own food that time, and we always do.
We always do, yeah.
But there are certain expenses here. So please call and support KBOO from out of town, 1-877-500-KBOO, or if you're right in Portland and it's a local call for you, 503-232-8818.
And you can walk by, too. We're right here at 20 Southeast 8th, just right off Burnside. If you've never been to our studio before, it's a fascinating place, and you get to see radio being made. And, gosh, if you walk in, you'll probably get hooked like the rest of us do, and you'll end up making radio.
But it's a fun hook.
Yes, it is.
A good hook.
And the thing is, if you say you pledge $120 a year, okay, and you come in to pay that, and you look around at our equipment, you'll probably bump it up to $180. You say, how can they make radio on these museum pieces? But we do it.
Yep, this is the miracle of KBOO.
503-232-8818. Outside of town, 1-877-500-5266. Toll-free call, KBOO.fm online.
I'd like to point out that this is the last break, the last time the food show will be able to ask you to support this show and this station, because we're on only once a month, and this is our last break during the show. We're about to go back to another report. So please do support us. Your money does support the whole station. If you don't like this show, maybe you like one of the others, but call now, please.
Yeah, support us anyway.
Support us anyway.
Even if you don't like to eat. Even if you don't eat.
And who doesn't like to eat?
Really?
Yeah, really. And since we're talking about food, let's give thanks once again to the restaurants who have provided food for our volunteers today. We have BoxLunchOnline.com, which I'm still curious about.
It's not virtual food. It's real food.
It's real food. Yeah. And Acapulco's Gold at Real Food at 2610 Northwest Vaughan.
You know, a lot of these restaurants, most of them actually, they supply food for the phone answerers during the pledge drive. A lot of these, all of these, I think, are relatively small businesses. We don't have the chains here. They do this because they can afford to spare a little food and support a station they like. Sometimes they don't have cash. You know, they'd rather do it. But these are small business people. Your food, as you know, if you've listened to the show, does not have to come from the chains, chain restaurants or chain supermarkets. We support people who have a personal interest in this. And so please call us. One more time, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO. Kate?
Yeah, do you think eating contests are purely an American concept, considering most of the world doesn't have enough food? People's does things a little different. It's more of a community-based thing, really. There's less competition. Everybody wins. So, here it is, the People's Inhalation Exhibition Pie Eating Event. Take it away.
You are about to enter the pie eating contest.
Yes, I am. I'm signing up for the 450. I'm going to dominate.
You don't have to be a professional. You don't even have to have ever competed before. You do, however, have to love apple pie. So if you love apple pie, please report to the pie eating table promptly. First heat will be beginning in about 10 minutes.
You know, Miles, this morning I was watching over some videotapes of previous...
You win the glory of having won.
People's inhalation exhibition, PIE, eating competitions. Is the case that women don't actually like fruit pie? Is there a woman here who could maybe prove me wrong by signing up?
We still need sign-ups for the 450 and 510 heat.
Put your money where your mouth is, ladies. Do you like fruit pie? Step on up.
We'll be starting in about 5 minutes.
This is Western-style American pie eating, singles only. There are no teams. You gotta want it. Do you want it?
No.
Now there's room for more people who like fruit pie to step right up to the pie eating table. Tall Ben from Eugene Fuchs, step on up.
I'm ready to go.
Ooh, they say I got a hollow leg.
92nd annual People's Pie Eating Exhibition. I'm Miles Achita with Lucy Hines here. Thanks for coming out. It's a great day here in Portland, Oregon. It's overcast. And Lucy, we got an interesting arrangement going this year.
Rules are tightening up. You know, as the event gains popularity on the West Coast, there's a lot more serious judgment going on. Miles, we've had some problems previous years with sandbagging. This is not free dessert, folks. This is for people who love to eat fruit pie. You can't just shove it around.
Real Nobinson is not in the event. He's the 2004 champ, and last year's 2000. 2005 champ is also not here, so this event is really wide open. And as Lucy mentioned, the International Pie Eating Association has come up with new rules, one of which is the no sandbagging, no eating to take home your pie. We're not allowing that. We're doing slices this year. If you finish your whole piece during the middle of the round, you only have 3 minutes, you raise your hand and our pie server will come and give you another piece. And we'll be judging it that way. Also, there's no physical contact allowed with the other contestants. So that's a new rule. Also, drug testing this year is mandatory, and we've tested all contestants, and they're all positive, so we're good.
All right, we are ready for the first heat.
You're on that one.
Okay, folks, you can just stand in front of a plate of pie. You know what? I see a sparkle in the eye here. I see a few competitors who look like they're hungry for some fruit pie. Hands to yourselves, people. I don't want to have to disqualify anyone this year. It got messy last year. I noticed Tanya's using a more controversial strategy, which is laying down a base layer of beer to pad the pie as it hits the stomach.
That's shown mixed results from other competitors this year. We have two more pies waiting on plates here if anyone wants to step up. This is the International Pie Inhalation Event Open. It's open to amateurs and professionals. Okay, we need complete silence from the audience, please. Okay. This is it. Are you folks ready? 3, 2, 1, eat!
I see some people who are leaving their crust behind. Do they think we can't see the crust on the plate?
This is definitely not breaking world records here. We're down to 7 seconds left. Everyone count down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mounts off! Mounts off the pie! Judges, it's a community judgment here. Liza! Liza!
Congratulations.
Thank you.
2.5 slices. No one else did anyone even finish 2. Who else finished 2?
I was hungry and feeling competitive.
This competition suits all ages, all kinds of people, and eliminates those pie stealers. I think 2.5 slices is going to be what it takes to beat Tall Ben over here. I'm looking forward to taking down the competition.
4:50 will be the next heat. We still have room for 3 more spots. 6 minutes left.
The second heat is an invitational. We've got some seasoned pie eaters who we trust. We know their style. We know how they work together. And we love to see them do what they do. It's heat 2. Do you have a piece of pie? Yeah, there it is. That's your pie.
Are you ready?
Step right up and pick out some pie.
Yeah. Round 2. Of the 93rd Annual International Pie Inhalation Event.
Ready, poised, hands in pockets. Is that going to slow them down? We'll see. Are you guys all standing in front of a slice?
Well, hi, Bruce. Were you here for the first round of this pie eating contest?
I just happened to wander in.
Anyone of any age can join. We are considering having a cuteness maximum. Are they too cute to compete? You decide, guys. Okay, folks, take your positions. Hands behind your back. No contact with other competitors. When you're done with your slice, raise your hand. Melissa will be serving you. 3, 2, 1. Set yourself free, people. Use your imaginations. Come on. And that's crust and fruit going down in one bite. Not eating in layers, folks. Not just going top to bottom, side to middle. That's how it gets done. We've seen it win before. It always works.
I think Andy's done this at home before. I mean,
you might just be really hungry. He wants it. He loves to compete. He loves to win. You can just see it in his eyes. Oh. It gets disgusting.
Are we going to run out of pies? We're down to 15 seconds. Step back, please. Step back.
That was absurd.
Our winner is Ben. He ate 72 pieces of pie. That's a world record. Well, it was at least 5.5. Anyway, the next round will be at 5:10, and we still have room for no one. We can take 2 more people for round 3. 5:10. See you then.
Yeah, so I downed about 2.5 slices, 3 slices, and you know, in the first round, that would have been good competition, but the guy to my left, man, he ate about 4.5 slices, and my other two competitors were holding even at about 3, 3.5 each. But you know what really emerged is the wild card tactic was laugh tactic. Whew, they got half the table laughing. That Big Ben guy, man, he just dominated.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, though. I needed the belly laugh. It was really healing.
Congratulations.
I tell you, holler legs. That's what it's all about. My compliments to the chef.
The pie was very good. I was just drinking it down. I just gorged myself.
Our third and final heat has an optional master's category for those who've competed and done well in the past. We invite Paul Ben from Eugene. Liza, remember her from round one?
All right, we're going to be getting round three going here soon. Round three, pie eating contest.
We invite you all back and eat a last quarter, three quarters, pie and a half. All right, if you're signed up for the pie eating contest and you have not eaten pie, now is the time. This is the final heat.
All right, Lucy Hines, I think the crowd is growing anxious for this. This is looking to be an interesting lineup. What's your pregame analysis?
You know, I see some new faces out here, and I just don't know what we're in for. Anything could happen. This is anybody's game. It's the Wild West of competition.
I'm just hungry.
I think we're ready here. All right, faces over your plates. 3, 2, 1, eat.
I want to remind contestants to wait at least 45 minutes before going swimming today. I don't want to see anybody cramp up. Oh, man's ready for another slice. He's ready for another slice. That's right, folks. Someone's on their third slice.
So we're halfway through, folks. Halfway through.
You know, I'd like Ben and Liza, winners of our first two heats, to ask themselves, what if someone eats more than you? Are you going to demand a rematch? It's time to start thinking about that. Oh, whoa! We've got some very hungry competitors here. You know, Miles, when you see someone still chewing and raising their hand for the next slice, not even waiting to swallow, that's when you know you're dealing with someone who's been on the pro circuit for a while.
That anticipation is key to really any sport, and definitely in pie eating.
Whoa, Stan, Ariana's stepdad. He is ready for another slice.
We're down to 10 seconds, folks. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, chew it, 4, 3, 2, 1, stop eating! Faces away from the plates, please, folks.
We're actually going to have a ref's call on this one because we've got a very close competition. It's going to take a minute here.
Okay, wow, that was excellent.
Well, folks, after much deliberation, it turns out our winner's name's Sun. Let's give him a ref. Let's give him a ref. He was on number 4. Keep in mind that the overall winner of the day, Ben, pie and a half in 3 minutes. We would consider having a finals round, but I just don't want to see someone who's eaten a pie and a half eat more pie. I don't know about the rest of you. Thank you very much, People's Co-op, for hosting us again this year.
I think the real winners, the contestants, the people watching, the community, the farmers, Cheyenne and Sarah for making the pies, we all won. Thank you for coming out today.
I couldn't take one more step.
Miles has been holding down the pie competition at People's for a few years.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. It's really good. Really, when I'm announcing, I'm not thinking about the pies. I'm not thinking about the people, what they're doing. I'm just in my thing. But now that I can sit back and enjoy the pie with my hands, that's good. Good life. No, we're done. There's two more pies for a few.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to
All right.
I had a lot of fun doing that. You know, that was community.
Yeah.
Now, Kate, I know you're too modest to say it, but I'll say it. The pies used in that contest were baked by Kate.
Actually, I only cut the apples.
Okay, and your daughter, Cheyenne, and your grandson, Sayer.
That's right.
Okay.
And there are a lot of pies out there.
22 pies.
I have to admit that one piece, we just found this out while we were chatting, one piece was a quarter of a pie.
My gosh.
So that person who ate 6 pieces ate a pie and a half.
That's right.
3 minutes.
But you know, you can get a piece of the Kebu pie too. We want to make sure that you don't forget to get a piece of the Kebu pie at 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. Or if you're out there online, kboo.fm, click on that Join Now button. We need your support.
We really do thank everyone who has called during the food show and throughout our membership drive so far, and all those who are going to call, whether you know it yet or not. Well, that's it for this month's edition of The Food Show. We'll be back on November 20th, the third Monday of the month, as usual, and that's just before Thanksgiving. And we'll be telling you about some uncommon things to eat next month. More about game, fruits you've never seen in stores or at the farmer's market, even insects. Thank you for listening.
Yum.
And we also want to thank our engineer, Carl, and
thanks,
Ed and Elizabeth at Membership Central.
All the peoples at Peoples.
All the peoples at Peoples. And our...
Sarah at Nana's Noodles.
Right. And our public affairs goddess, Kathleen Stevenson.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kathleen.
This is KBOO Portland.
Attention nonprofit job seekers, Portland's largest networking forum, Idealist.org's Nonprofit Career Fair, will be held at Portland State University on October 19th. This is an opportunity to connect directly with representatives from as many as 60 to 70 organizations in one space about current and future employment, internship, and volunteer opportunities. Additionally, free information sessions offering nonprofit career advice will be available to all job seekers. The fair will be held in the ballroom on the third floor of the Smith Memorial Student Union at Portland State University on October 19th from 11 to 3 p.m. For more information, go to idealist.org/fairs. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this event.
And you're listening to KBOO-FM in Portland, Oregon. The time is 11 o'clock, and it's time for Democracy Now!
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 in Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Scores of Iraqis died over the weekend as the country's civil war intensified. The worst bloodshed occurred around the town of Balad, where 17 Shiite laborers were kidnapped and beheaded Friday. In response, Shia militias poured into the area and went on a killing spree. According to the Washington Post, hospital workers were overwhelmed by the violence. By Sunday, a total of 80 bodies were stacked up in the hospital morgue. Most had been shot in the head. Residents reported many more bodies remained in the street, but the hospital was unable to pick them up. The northern oil city of Kirkuk was largely shut down Sunday after a wave of car bomb attacks. At least 12 people died. Another 56 were injured. One car bomb exploded outside a girls' high school, killing two students and injuring 25. Earlier today, a car bomb exploded outside an Iraqi bank in the town of Suwera, killing 10 people and wounding 15. On Sunday, the Iraqi government indefinitely postponed a highly publicized National Reconciliation Conference that was to begin this week. Officials said the conference had to be put off because of unspecified emergency reasons. The Times of London is reporting that calls are increasing to oust Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and replace the current government with a group of five strongmen who would impose martial law. According to the paper, the proposal to suspend the democratic process in Iraq is being widely discussed in political and intelligence circles. Last week, one prominent Sunni politician traveled to Arab capitals to seek support to replace the current government with a hardline, quote, government of national salvation. Meanwhile, a network of militant Sunni groups have declared a separate Islamic Republic inside Iraq, stretching from Anbar province in the west to Baghdad to as far as north as Kirkuk. The Sunni groups said the move was needed as Kurdish and Shia groups moved to set up their own republics. Journalists in Iraq also continue to come under increasing attacks. On Saturday, an Iraqi reporter working for the government-run Al-Arkia TV channel was killed in a drive-by shooting in southern Baghdad. Another journalist with the TV channel Nahrain was kidnapped. On Friday, a radio announcer on The Voice of Iraq was shot while driving to work. On Thursday, 11 people were assassinated at a TV station in Baghdad in the deadliest attack on journalists in the war so far. The U.S. death toll is also soaring. 53 U.S. soldiers have died so far in October, putting this month on pace to be one of the deadliest of the war for U.S. forces. At least 428 U.S. troops have been injured since September 28th. The United Nations Refugee Agency is estimating more than 1.5 million people are now displaced in Iraq. Many have been displaced since the first Gulf War, but more than 365,000 have fled their homes since February. The Iraqi government estimates that at least 50,000 Iraqis are now leaving their homes each month due to the increase in violence. In Australia, the country's former defense chief has acknowledged that the Iraq war has increased the threat of Islamic militancy around the world. Peter Cosgrove's comments came one day after Britain's army chief made similar statements. Sir Richard Dannett, the chief of the British staff, said Thursday the presence of British troops in Iraq exacerbates the security problem and that they should get out sometime soon. He went on to warn the Iraq war could break the British army. Dannett has come under intense criticism from Tony Blair's government, as well as the Bush administration. But public opinion polls show he has the support of the British people. One poll found 3/4 of respondents believe Britain should pull out of Iraq sometime soon. In other news, an Italian photojournalist has been kidnapped in Afghanistan. Gabriele Torcello was seized on Thursday from a public bus by 5 gunmen. He's been working in Afghanistan since 2005, has also covered conflicts in Kashmir and Nepal. The United Nations Security Council has unanimously agreed to impose new sanctions against North Korea following North Korea's nuclear tests. These sanctions ban the importation of materials related to weapons of mass destruction, as well as ballistic missiles, some conventional weapons, and luxury goods. This is John Bolton, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations.
The proclaimed test of a nuclear device by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea unquestionably poses one of the gravest threats to international peace and security that this council has ever had to confront.
The New York Times called the sanctions the toughest international action against North Korea since the end of the Korean War. North Korea's ambassador to the United Nations, Park Gil-yoo, criticized the UN vote.
If the United States increase pressure upon the Democratic People's Republic of Korea persistently, the DPRK will continue to take physical countermeasures, considering it as a declaration of war.
A British coroner has ruled U.S. troops should be prosecuted for the unlawful killing of journalist Terry Lloyd in Iraq in March 2003. Lloyd was a well-known foreign correspondent for the British television network ITN. The coroner ruled Lloyd was shot in the back by Iraqi soldiers, then as he was being driven to a hospital in a civilian minivan. Lloyd was shot in the head by U.S. troops. This is Terry Lloyd's daughter, Chelsea Lloyd.
The killing of my father would seem to amount to murder, which is deeply shocking. We call on the Attorney General and the DPP to commence proceedings to bring the soldiers, including their commanding officers, to justice.
Danielle Demoustier, the ITN cameraman who survived the incident, said the U.S. forces should be prosecuted for war crimes. This is Louis Charlambeau, attorney for the Lloyd family.
The verdict of unlawful killing was inescapable and came about because U.S. forces appear to have allowed their soldiers to behave like trigger-happy cowboys.
Meanwhile, Friday, a U.S. Marine was charged with murdering and kidnapping an Iraqi man. Lance Corporal Jerry Shumate Jr. is one of 8 servicemen accused of kidnapping and killing an Iraqi civilian in the village of Hamdaniya. He's been ordered to remain in Camp Pendleton Brig until his trial in February. Israel has stepped up its attacks on the Gaza Strip, killing at least 22 Palestinians since Thursday. This comes as tensions remain high between the Palestinian factions Hamas and Fatah. On Sunday, Hamas accused Fatah of accepting over $40 million in aid from the Bush administration as part of a U.S. effort to topple the Hamas-led government. And the Israeli president, Moshe Katsav, faces possible indictment for rape, sexual harassment, fraud, and wiretapping. The Israeli police said Sunday they've uncovered enough evidence to charge Katsav with the crimes. Police have received complaints from 10 women against him. As President, Katsav is immune from prosecution, but he could be charged if impeached by the Knesset. Here in this country, the FBI is investigating Republican Congressmember Kurt Weldon to determine whether he illegally helped his daughter's company win over $1 million in contracts from foreign clients. The FBI has been investigating the Pennsylvania Republican for months, but it only came to light over the weekend after the FBI referred the matter to the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section. Meanwhile, Republican Congressmember Bob Ney has pleaded guilty to felony charges of conspiracy and making false statements in the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal. Despite the guilty plea, Ney remains a member of Congress, but he says he would resign in the next few weeks. Ney faces up to 10 years in prison and $500,000 in fines. In New York, hate crime victim Michael Sandy has died. The 29-year-old gay man was brutally beaten up last week after chatting online with two men who convinced him to meet him for sex at a Brooklyn parking lot. Police say Sandy, an African-American, was met by four white males who robbed and beat him. The men chased Sandy onto a nearby street where he was hit by a passing car. The men beat him again as he lay on the road. In Ecuador, the leftist economist Rafael Correa will face off against one of the country's wealthiest men, Álvaro Noboa, in a presidential runoff next month. Early results from the first round of voting showed Noboa had a slight lead over Correa. Correa is seen as a close ally of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, while Noboa is openly pro-Washington. Chilean President Michelle Bachelet returned on Saturday to the secret detention center where she was imprisoned and tortured more than 30 years ago under the Pinochet regime.
We were lucky enough to survive. Many others were not so lucky. Among them, my father did not survive the prison or the torture.
Chile. President Michelle Bachelet's trip marked the first presidential visit to Villa Grimaldi, one of Chile's most infamous secret prisons. In September, Chile's Supreme Court cleared the way for Augusto Pinochet to face possible charges of murder, torture, and rights abuses at Villa Grimaldi. New questions are being raised over whether the United States is continuing to operate secret overseas prisons. The Spanish newspaper El País is reporting the Bush administration is holding a Spanish citizen in a secret CIA prison. The man, Mustafa Setmarin, has been accused of being involved in September 11th and planning the 2004 Madrid train bombings. He was captured in Pakistan a year ago, but his whereabouts are unknown. The Guardian newspaper reports college professors and staff in Britain may soon be asked to spy on Asian-looking and Muslim students they suspect of involvement in Islamic extremism. The paper obtained an 18-page document that reveals Britain's Department of Education has drawn up a series of proposals on how the spy program should work. Teachers are likely to be asked to report suspicious students to a special branch of the government. Waqas Khan, the president of the Federation of Student Islamic Societies, says the program is potentially the widest infringement of the rights of Muslim students ever in Britain. In Bangladesh, thousands of people greeted the new Nobel Peace Prize winner, Muhammad Yunus, on Sunday when he visited the city of Chobra, the birthplace of his pioneering microcredit scheme.
It's a fantastic celebration going on. It's a wonderful news for all of us, for Bangladesh as a whole, and also for microcredit. We have been doing this for the last 30 years. Our people here, young people, have worked very hard to make a dream come true. And today, in a way, it has come true because the world has recognized that it is something people can rely on in getting poor people out of poverty.
Muhammad Yunus was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize on Friday. In California, a 14-year-old girl was pulled out of school last week and questioned by federal agents over a posting on her MySpace webpage. The agents approached Julia Wilson after she published a cartoon with the words, "Kill Bush." On Wednesday, the agents removed the teenager from her biology class and questioned her for 15 minutes without her parents present. Julia said her intent was to protest the Iraq War, not to threaten the president. And the legendary New York club CBGB's has closed its doors after 30 years. Last night, the poet and singer Patti Smith played the final set at the club, hailed by many as the birthplace of punk music. The owner of CBGB says he now wants to reopen the club in Las Vegas. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And this is KABU, and we are asking you to contribute to the continuity of Amy Goodman. We know that a lot of people wanted Amy on the air. We have her now in daily doses. We moved a lot of programming around to be able to have Amy Goodman and bring it to you on a regular basis. And show us how much you still value this offering for, by calling us right now and pledging your support. 503-232-8818. If you're outside the Portland metro area, 1-877-500-KBOO.
Amy Goodman is the star, the, I don't know what else to call her. She's the reigning queen of real news. I have a friend back in D.C. I just spent a couple of weeks in D.C. visiting, and my friend back there, she doesn't listen to NPR anymore. She doesn't listen to CNN anymore. She listens only to Amy Goodman. That's where she gets her news, because Amy Goodman is the only one she trusts.
She's solid gold, Amy is. And she was here just a couple of weeks ago.
That's
packed
right.
The house, packed the Baghdad Theater, and that happens every time she comes. She was on the 86th City tour to promote her, to celebrate her 10-year anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of Democracy Now! Pretty amazing person, pretty amazing show.
She's real nice, too. I met her at an NFCB conference, a community broadcasters conference, and no swelled head, nothing like that. She's just a real person. Now, let's talk about a little thank you gift. If you want to contribute to the KABU in the name of Amy Goodman, in the name of Democracy Now! At 503-232-8818, or if you live out way outside the state at KABU.FM, there's a book entitled Static by Amy Goodman, and that's for a $90 pledge, minimum pledge. If you want to pledge more, please feel free. But that $90 is $7.50 a month, I believe, which doesn't figure out a whole lot of money, really. So, again, that's 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. If you're living outside the immediate Portland metro area, even just across the river in Vancouver, that's the number to call. 1-877-500-5266. Amy Goodman, real news. Real news you can use.
Real news you can use. I want to thank Kate. This is leftover from the food show, but Kate, one of the producers of the food show, and was, as we said earlier, we love our producers who volunteer their time to do programming, excellent programming at KABU, and we love them even more because they put their money behind their voice, and they pledge just like the rest of us.
Yeah, I do.
People. See, Ed pledges. Ed's a programmer here, and I'm not a programmer, but I put my money here. And I come in every pledge drive because I think it's just so important for us to all of us give the money that we can give from our hearts, from our souls, from our wallets to keep this wonderful community resource going. 503-232-8818.
Now we have a goal of $600 for the show. I would be ashamed. It would be horrifying if we didn't do $600 for the show. And it's up to you. You know, all we can do is ask. It's out there. You can listen to it for free. There's no way we can come around. I mean, I can't send Bruno around with a pool cue to break your knees if you don't, although I think about it sometimes. It's all totally up to you. You know, you have to go to the phone. You have to make the decision. You out there have to make the decision.
That's right.
To come to the phone.
Yep.
So get off that old rusty dusty, go to the phone and dial 503-232-8818. Outside of town, 1-877-500-5266. And if you're glued to your computer, KABU.FM.
Okay, and we want to thank Cooper's Coffee for today's breakfast. We didn't have them on our list of restaurants to thank earlier today. So Cooper's Coffee at 6041 Southeast Stark is one of the restaurants that have provided food for our volunteers. The others are BoxLunchOnline.com and Acapulco's Gold at 2610 Northwest Vaughan. I still haven't any idea what the virtual lunch from Box Lunch Online is, but that should be here at lunchtime. And
that'll be interesting, eh?
Interesting.
It won't be zeros and ones. It'll be real food.
Real food, right.
Yeah.
And we can describe it to you, but we can't give you any qualitative, so just go figure. Anyway, a little bit of shameless self-promotion here. I made a movie. I went to New Orleans in the fall, and then I was called back to New Orleans by somebody that I met at that time and got involved in the production of a documentary. And I think it fits really in the theme of Amy Goodman's show, because Amy did an incredible coverage of New Orleans. But she and all of the people who did cover New Orleans left one story, I think, not quite told. There were slight references to it, but I haven't seen this anywhere covered, and that's what I went down to cover in the movie that I made, which is called Left to Die. And I have offered copies of this for premiums, and that's for a $60 minimum pledge. I'm also showing, I'm going to be showing it, and we'll definitely get the word out over KABU. It's going to be November 9th at the Clinton Street Theater, with other venues to be announced later. But there are copies of this, the director's cut, that I'm currently working on, improving it from the first showing at the Hollywood. That's for a $60 minimum pledge, and I encourage you to ask for that and also to come out and see the movie.
Now, we'd like to thank Florin of Portland, who's a renewing member. $60. Now, that's 10% of where we need to be. I'd like to do like 120% of where we need to be for Amy Goodman, because Amy Goodman is very important to us, very important to the progressive community everywhere in the country, because she is the font of real news. No spin, no crap. No commercial considerations for what she does. She puts people on the hot seat and roasts them if they deserve it, and gets the right guys to talk to and the right women to talk to. 503-232-8818.
Yeah, I think Amy is uncanny. You know, before you ever even have a hint sometimes that there's something going on, she's got the full story there, with people from both sides arguing it out, duking it out right there in her studio. I sometimes wonder, you know, how they manage to stay composed, because it gets really, really intense. But that's the way we need to hear it. You know, we're not getting balance anywhere. We're not getting balanced on the mainstream, and they always, you know, anytime a left voice starts to show up, they say, oh, but we can't do that because we have to have balance, meaning we have to have three right-wing voices for every one on the left. What was the story we heard just recently, maybe on Amy, where if you have Michael Moore on, you have to have 37 right-wing voices?
That's right.
balance.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, we're going to wind this up. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Back to Amy Goodman.
Civil rights attorney Lynn Stewart is to be sentenced in federal court in Manhattan today. She faces up to 30 years in prison. Last year, Lynn Stewart was convicted on 5 counts of conspiring to aid terrorists and lying to the government. Her case has reverberated with defense attorneys around the country. Many argue the government's aim is to discourage them from representing unpopular clients. Stewart was convicted of smuggling out messages from her jailed client, Sheikh Omar Abdurrahman, also known as the Blind Sheikh. He's serving a life sentence on terror-related charges. Most notably, Stewart was convicted of helping Rahman contact followers in Egypt with messages that could have ended a ceasefire there and ignited violence. Stewart's co-defendants, Ahmed Sattar, a postal worker who acted as a paralegal for Abdurrahman, and Mohammed Yusri, an Arabic translator, were also convicted of all charges against them. This was the first time the federal government prosecuted a defense attorney in a terrorism case. The 7-month trial was held in the same New York federal courthouse, just blocks from our firehouse studio, where the Rosenbergs were tried for conspiracy to commit espionage more than a half century ago. It featured very few witnesses, as the government's case was based primarily on transcripts from more than 85,000 secretly recorded audio and video clips of meetings between Lynn Stewart and her client, as well as the home phone of Ahmed Abdel Sattar. Last month, Stewart wrote a personal letter to the court and acknowledged for the first time she knowingly violated prison rules and was careless, over-emotional, and politically naive in her representation of her client. She's asked for leniency from the court.